Good afternoon. Welcome to Hockey Central. Once again, towards the bottom of the hour, it is the return of John Shannon to these airwaves. Looking forward to catching up with Shannon here at the bottom of the hour, handling some of the affairs yesterday for the Oilers-Ottawa Senators game. Good to see John back at it. Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne. Gentlemen, we have a lot to get to today. We'll talk plenty about last night's matchup. There are 10 games tonight. Oh, sorry, scratch that. There are 9 games tonight. The 6 o'clock Eastern start, which was going to be Philadelphia and Washington, has now been postponed. There is a COVID situation around the Philadelphia Flyers. We await more information through the afternoon and into the evening on that one. Pick up that conversation in a bit. But guys, the big story of the day. It is National Pizza Day. Now, Stewie, Justin, a little glimpse inside my previous life. When I was at university, what I used to do every now and then, go to the establishments and get buckled and come home. And what I would do is I would order a pizza and tell them not to cut it. Okay? So it would just like be a pizza with no slices. And I always made for some strange phone conversations. Fold it in half and it became the Super Panzo. That was always my pizza go-to after I had been over-served. Stewie, we'll start with you. Where does your brain go on National Pizza Day?
On Pizza Day reminds me of growing up, and my brother and I still have a long-standing beef where he wants to fight me to the death over the color of the sky if I think it's the wrong color, just based on the fact that there used to be 3-for-1 pizza. It used to be an old company in Scarborough.
I remember that, yeah.
You get 3 pizzas for the slice of one. And me being the oldest brother, I'm the oldest of 7, I got to get a whole pizza to myself, and the rest of the family had to share the other 2 pizzas. So who my brother is, he was very, very upset that I got a whole pizza to myself. And, you know, we'd be having pizza fights. He'd be throwing rocks at me. And to this day, he looks at me a certain way, and it's because I got my own pizza from 3-for-1 pizza.
It does seem wildly disproportionate to get a whole pie. That's a lovely win on your part.
We're going all in on our youngest son. Here comes that cottage in Muskoka. Give the kid the pizza. He's got the talent.
Well, I had to buy them a house when I turned 19, so.
You paid for the pizza in the end. That's
good trade-off.
What about you, Barney?
Just shout out to Long Island in general, but La Scala Pizza in Dix Hills, Jimmy D's in Greenlawn. I'm a staunch New York pizza guy. I will fight anyone who mentions deep dish over as a comparable. So just a little love for my Long Island friends out there.
You know, there was this great spot. I don't think it's there anymore. There was a pizza spot on Harvard Street in downtown Toronto. Now, in that area, there was always a few of the great ones. There was Pizza Gigi, Papa Cheo's. Those were great pizza spots back in the day when I lived in Toronto. Now I'm up in Stouffville. But there was a place on Harvard, and you could tell, like, the old guy that worked there, you could tell he was the owner. He made the pizzas. Maybe he even delivered the pizzas himself. Who knows? But this was in the era where everybody was trying to deliver their pizza the fastest. 30 minutes or it's free. 20 minutes or it's free. We're free. We're going to get it to you in 15 minutes. Like, it was this insane competition amongst pizza shops to see who could get the pizza there the quickest. And his tagline for his shop, which he had, I'm sure, owned for like 40 or 50 years, was always the same. And it always made me laugh when I ordered from there. You take the order, you tell me how much it is, like, okay, that's going to cost you, I don't know, $23.50. And then his tagline was always great. He goes, all right, it'll be there in 40 minutes or it's late. I always thought that was a real nice touch. 40 minutes or it's late. Whatever you do, maybe enjoy a slice today. It is, after all, National Pizza Day, and we do encourage you to consume your pizza locally and support your local businesses out there. Toronto, you talk about 3-for-1, Stewie. 3 wins in a row, 3-1 last night. The Toronto Maple Leafs take care of the Vancouver Canucks. Anthony Stewart, we'll let you have first crack at this one. Did it seem like Toronto was sleepy for a couple of periods, woke up and said, okay, let's just end this now with a couple of quick goals? How'd you see it?
I thought you were going to say 3 shots per period there, but I was trying to figure out the best analogy of what the Leafs did last night, and the best one I could come up with was day 4 in Vegas. And there's only a certain breed of person that can go to Vegas for a week.
There shouldn't be a day
and after about So after about 3 days of Vegas, you know, that fourth day, you're just like, okay, you know what? We at least got to do something today. So you get out of bed, you go to the mall, you eat some pizza, you get a good meal in you. But you're just not up to par like you were the previous 3 nights or the 3 days. So you try to do something. And because at the end of the trip, you want to say at least – we did something on day four as opposed to sleep all day. So Toronto, they were sleeping most of the game, but they said, hey, you know what? It's the third period. We're here. We might as well get the win. So the best way that I can equate last night, it was day four in Vegas for them.
Really well said. Really well said. Although I've never booked a trip with a fourth day in Vegas that wasn't travel on the way out. But I'll just – that's a game you lose if you're not the more talented team. That's just it. You know, like so there's – a thing in hockey where you can be the more talented team and play below your ability, play below your own standard, and get away with it because you just have the more talented team, the more talented guys, and that's the type of separation that you get in the standings between all the muck, all the teams find them in the middle from, you know, the sixth best team to the 26. Everyone's kind of in the muck, and you separate yourself from that group by just being the more talented team that gets wins like last night where nothing went right. You got a couple of guys who shoot it in the net and you win. So free points for Toronto last night. Kudos to Freddie, by the way.
And 31 saves. Like, that was a real good performance. Like, the first couple of periods, I know the Leafs had, you know, plenty of shooting chances. They seemed to be shooting wide a ton yesterday. And, you know, there were a lot of shots that just didn't hit the net. But you're right. Frederik Andersen was excellent. Stu, I want to talk to you about Austin Matthews. He scores again, playing really good defense. You know, it's the 2-1 goal, the game-winning goal for him. You maintain he has the best release in the NHL, and if people want to argue with you, what Twitter handle should they use?
At David Amber. And the funny part is, when I mentioned that, people actually went to his account and started chirping him. But, you know, just with that release, how he gets it off, and I was talking about this the other night, is, you know, typically when a shooter's about to shoot, he has a tell. He either drops his shoulders or he drops his hands down his stick. But with Matthews, you know, he's going at full speed with two hands on his stick, and he just, boom, quick release, and it can go anywhere he needs it to get. So I haven't seen a guy, you know, have a release like that. Maybe Joe Sakic, but the fact that he does not have a shooter's tell, it's just confusing goalies, and I think that's part of the success of him being one of the best shooters in the National Hockey League. But I don't really think we really appreciate him in this market because there are great other great players on this team. But with that release, I don't even want to predict how many goals this guy's going to score in his career, but it's going to be a lot.
Well, you know what it reminds me of is, remember a couple of years ago, James Neal scored 4 goals for the Oilers? I think it was against the Islanders. He had a 4-goal game, and the fourth goal is like a rush where he fades away into the corner
and takes that one.
Yeah, and takes like a one-timer on the ice that beats Thomas Greiss, because it's like, who shoots that? Like, who? That's not a good play. But when you're really feeling it the way that Neil was feeling it, everything was going in. It's just like, God, you just keep putting it on net. You put it on net with intent, like, you know, a little force behind it, and you never know. That's Austin Matthews every shift right now. Like, everywhere he is, it feels like he's got this vibe that, like, you never know. It's just all going in. He shoots with intent, and, man, look at him go.
And maybe the last guy that we've seen have this ability or this optical illusion or whatever it is, maybe the last guy is Pavel Datsyuk. But I can't remember the last player that I've seen that looks like he has the puck glued to his stick or taped to his stick. Like, when he has it, like, no one cradles the puck like he does. No one controls it like he does, no matter what the speed, no matter what foot he's on, no matter if there's pressure, there's not pressure, he's getting bodied. He has that thing, Stewie, attached to his blade. Like, I know there's a lot of impressive things about Matthews, and we talk about the release all the time, and that's right, there's no tell with the hands or the shoulders. That's a great point. But the ability to have your hockey tape act as act as stick'em glue, or, you know, I remember guys used to call it Gordie Howe tape, the double-sided tape, the friction tape, right? And by the end of the third period, your blade felt like it was watered down because it absorbed so much of the snow and the water from the ice. I don't know the last guy that I've seen have that specific ability to have that puck stick to his blade the way that Matthews does.
Yeah, and he's doing it with two hands on his stick. And typically when you're dangling a guy, you go inside, outside to your backhand with one hand on your stick. But he's doing it with two hands. So, you know, he doesn't really have a big wheelhouse with his quote-unquote dangles. But I'm most impressed now. I think his new nickname's got to be, you know, Speed 2, because he's just in cruise control out there. He looks like he's in cruise control, but he's going full speed. It takes me back to Game 2 against Vancouver where, you know, he's coming through, you know, he's exiting his zone at full speed. And JT Miller thinks he has a good gap. And it's just like, as soon as I saw that, I'm like, see you later, JT Miller, when he went in and scored. So the fact that he's skating at full speed and it's, you know, just looking so effortless and doing it with two hands and a stick, that's what I'm most impressed about with Auston Matthews.
Yeah, putting guys on their heels for once, eh? Instead of just having to shoot through players like he used to do off rushes now, we can put them on their heels because he might go around them. Definitely has another gear, and that's going to open things up above the D2. So he's just going to find more and more soft spots, which he already excelled at.
You mentioned a couple of seconds ago, Justin, Frederik Andersen, who specifically on those first two periods was excellent when they really needed him. Who else stood out for you yesterday? And do you put, you know, the combination of Brody and Riley in that discussion?
Well, I do, but also I'm starting to feel like there's something there with Mikko Lehtinen. Like, I think the Leafs are in a real trial period right now with some of these guys. Like, the Leafs are 10-2-1, and I used to complain about Babcock because I would say, you know, let's see what you got with some of these guys. Like, let's mix up some combinations, try some other guys, and I think you're seeing that with the Leafs where they're saying, you know, I don't genuinely believe, just a quick tangent, that the Leafs are putting out the best 12 guys every night, that they think these are our best 12. I think they're experimenting and seeing what they got with some of these guys, and I think that's the case with Barabanov, and I think it's the case with Lehtinen. It's like, they may end up being, you know, Lindholm and Ozhiganov if they don't pan out, but they're being given some rope to see what they are, and Lehtinen, to me, is taking that rope, and he's really excelling and looking like a guy who's going to be a part of their decor come playoffs. I've been impressed with his play last couple games.
Really quickly, a quick note here. We'll get back to the Maple Leaf talk. Elliot Friedman tweeting this a minute ago. Ron Hextall is negotiating with Pittsburgh to be general manager.
Whoa!
There's a little bit of a stretch here for the Pittsburgh Penguins where they're not playing. I didn't know they were going to put this together so quickly, but we'll see. It looks like, well, according to Elliot Friedman, Ron Hextall currently in the process of negotiating with the team to become the next general manager. We'll pick up that conversation after the Leafs Vancouver Canucks chat. Sorry, Stu, did you want to make a point about what Justin just said?
I think it's time we give Mitch Marner his flowers. And people are saying he had an off season last year, but right now he's quietly going about his season with 21 points, third in the National Hockey League. And I think lost in all the Auston Matthews talk and the Freddie Andersen and Wayne Simmonds is Mitch Marner's quietly just putting up numbers, running numbers. So Mitch Marner, I thought I'd mention him. It's time to give him some flowers because he's playing at an elite level like he was 2 years ago.
Okay, so this Hextall thing is heating up. We're going to get on this here in a couple of moments. I had someone text me last night with an interesting question that I didn't have a good answer to, but you guys are smarter than me. Someone texted me last night and said, the Toronto Maple Leafs are the top team right now. Would they be in this position if they never made the coaching change? Mm-hmm. If Mike Babcock was behind the bench.
Can I answer that question?
Of course, yeah. Shoot, Stewie.
I'm going to say no and take a look at what's going on with Columbus. And I'm sure we'll get down to that conversation a little bit later. And I just think with Mike Babcock, not to beat a dead horse, I think his messaging and his voice just got lost in the room. And this is a new generation of kids. And I'm going to be telling you that I'm seeing these kids coming where not that they don't respect time. It's just a different breed of kids. And you have to find a way to get through them. You have to be able to have different coaching styles at different times. You got to be able to have the carrot and the stick. So the coaches that are going to have success now and in the future are the ones that are going to be able to adapt to the generations of kids. So Sheldon Keefe, he's a younger guy. He's really getting through to this group. He's not trying to be an authority figure. I could see it probably being a big brother approach with how he's trying to have conversations with guys and see how they're doing away from the rink every single day. Manny Malhotra is a young guy. This is the new breed of coaching. This is what you're going to have to do if you want to have success. You've got to find a way to get through to all the players. So for me, Mike Babcock, I don't think he was really a good fit for this young group, the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Justin?
Yeah, no, I think Stewie makes a lot of good points. I'm on board with that. And, I'm biased, right? Like, I have a relationship with Sheldon from my time working with him. So
sure.
I was so impressed with his work ethic, and I'd never seen anyone think the way he does or work as hard as he does. So I am not surprised he's having success. But, you know, through 60 games of his NHL coaching career, you know, I think their only Tampa Bay has more wins than the Toronto Maple Leafs do. So certainly very impressive. And I don't know that any coach would have done much better than he's done with this group over that time.
Do we talk enough about Sheldon Keefe when it comes to the Toronto Maple Leafs? We'll close on this one. Then, as Dewey mentioned, I want to get the John Tortorella and then the Ron Hextall stuff with Pittsburgh. Do we talk enough about Keefe with this team? I mean, every day it's Matthews scores again. Another 3 points for Mitch Marner. Frederick Anderson with 31 saves. Morgan Riley. It seems to, at times, sort of get repetitive, but lost in all of this is there's a coach back there that's putting it all together. Do we talk enough about it?
Well, we probably don't, because it's really tough to know, you know, which strings are being pulled that wouldn't have been pulled with him there. All I know is they are getting the absolute max effort you can get from a guy. And I think sometimes coaches get comfortable and they don't look at new ways of doing things. And given the resources of the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think Keefe is doing the best at getting all he can out of what Toronto Maple Leafs organization can offer with their extra financial weight. So it's just tough to know on a daily basis what to talk about with what changes he's made.
All right, let's get to the Vancouver side of things here. What does this mean for the Vancouver Canucks? This is another tough loss. This is a team that, man, like, if you follow the postgame, like, I'm fascinated with the postgame comments from Vancouver Canucks players and Travis Green as well. They are constantly referencing last year's team. It's last year's team. Like, they can't get it out of their heads. Like, it almost seems as if maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but it seems like everything they're saying is a shot at the general manager. Like, from everyone, whether it's Hughes, whether it's Travis Green, everybody. It's all about last year's team. Is there something there, Stewie?
Yeah, but you can't live in the past. And if I'm on that Vancouver Canucks team and there's guys gone, I'm looking at it as an opportunity for me. If I'm a third line or fourth line guy, I want that opportunity. I want to show what I can do. But with this team right now, they're just sitting around waiting for something to happen. It's almost if they quit. It's almost like, oh, let's just keep doing what we're doing. Someone's going to get traded. You know, maybe a coach is going to get fired. Maybe a GM's going to get fired, but it's going to now spark us. But we talked about this at the beginning of the season, 56 game season. You cannot go on a slide like this. And if this goes on any longer, we're going to be talking about Vancouver being out of this race come, you know, March 1st. So they have to figure out a way, the leadership group. And I think the problem is now they're waiting on guys like Pettersson and Hughes to drag them out of a rut. That's too much of a responsibility for guys that are in their second, third year in the league. So I think guys like Horvat and Holtby and Edler, guys that have been around for a while, JT Miller, they got to step up, be leaders, and not have a pity party, because you're going to be out of this a lot sooner than later if you don't get your act together.
It's a great point, Justin. Let's not lose sight of one thing, and we all know this. All the points stay in the division this year. Mm-hmm. All the points stay here.
You remember, well, of course you do. Elliot has his stat in a normal season that, like, if you're 4 points out of a playoff spot come November 4th, I think it was, or some, like, a month into the season, a very small percentage of teams climb out of that hole. I cannot imagine it's going to get easier when, to your point, every point is going into the division and often 3 point games. You know, the hole looks awfully deep, awfully fast. And, you know, another point I saw made is, like, at this point, with less than 40 games to go in a season, it's like you're halfway through a season already. So it's trouble time, and you need to make your changes now. You can't. There's no time, no runway to let this sort it out on its own. You got to make moves.
Okay, let's go to the very latest news. And the Pittsburgh Penguins tweeted out about 20 minutes ago pictures of them practicing with wooden sticks. Everybody's got the old 50-30 Sherwoods rocking here with Pittsburgh, and they may have a new general manager with that story, as you tweeted a short time ago. Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts joins us. Ron Hextall, Elliot.
Come on, Jeff. I'm trying to finish my blog, you know.
I should respect that, I know.
yes, it looks like, you know, nothing is ever done until it's done. But, you know, Hextall had his second interview yesterday, and the word is they're negotiating with him on becoming the next general manager. Couple things. First of all, nothing's ever done until it's done. And secondly, I've been told that this is, quote-unquote, multi-layered. So there could be more to this in terms of what they're looking to bring in or who they're looking to bring in. Like, you know, one of the things I'd heard when they first started this whole thing was that there might be more than one hiring, and it's possible. I've just been told it's multi-layered and just there might be more coming as part of this. That's all. I don't know exactly what all that means.
Sure. And right now we're sort of throwing darts and trying to figure out what this all means and what this all means for the Pittsburgh Penguins in the future. And I do wonder, you know, does this, like, let's assume that this happens and it's finalized and Ron Hextall is the next general manager. Does that tell us anything about the direction of the Pittsburgh Penguins? Because let's not forget what happened with Philadelphia. Ron Hextall was there to rebuild the Philadelphia Flyers, and he was preaching patience. And the Philadelphia organization wasn't too concerned about patience at that point. They wanted wins, but Ron Hextall stuck to his guns. Does this tell us anything about where the Pittsburgh Penguins are at with the future of their team?
Well, I think what it tells us is that they feel that regardless of what they're doing at the NHL level, they need to rebuild their prospect base at the elsewhere. You know, the Penguins have mortgaged the future in a lot of ways to win cups, and you know, I'm of the belief that it's so hard to win a Stanley Cup that if I had a choice of winning the two in a row like they did and the three overall and then being where they are right now, I'd take what they did all the time. But eventually you have to build your base, and I think they one of the things I know they talked about with several candidates was how do we rebuild our base, and Hextall is obviously, as you said, very good at that. I think when it comes to their on-ice performance and their NHL team, the best sense I got, Jeff, is that they want to see where this season takes them. They would like to play out this year, see how far they go, and then make their decisions. And that, you know, that I think is kind of what they're looking at. There's some big decisions that have to be made this summer. They can extend Malkin. They can extend Letang. You know, Crosby has a little bit longer. You know, I think that's what it comes down to. I think they want to see where this goes and they make their calls after the year. So at least that's the impression I was getting.
Stewie.
Yeah, the Flyers mentioned, sorry, Pittsburgh mentioned that they wanted a GM with experience, and you know, you saw what he did with you know, in LA and Philadelphia. Do you think he got a bit of a raw deal in Philadelphia just basically he built that team and the success that they're having, he had a lot of his fingerprints on that?
Well, I think that people recognize that he had his fingerprints on it. Like, basically, what's happened in Philly since he's left there, Anthony, has not hurt his reputation. What I think happened there, Anthony, was simply a personality clash. And I think it's left hard feelings. You know, one of the things that people have kind of been laughing as Hextall has come to the forefront of this job is, could you really let such a passionate Flyer be the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins? I don't know if there's a guy in the league right now who would want to beat Philadelphia more than Hextall would, because I think there were hard feelings about the departure from them to him and from him to them. So it's certainly going to add another level of spice to this great rivalry.
Is it possible that this is sort of the first domino in the beginning of a fresh chapter in Pittsburgh Penguins lore? Like, it feels like, if you know, the Penguins are 5-5-1 right now with a -8 goal differential. They looked terrible in the bubble last year. The Stars are getting older. Could they move on from those guys at some point? Are we rounding a weird corner with the Pittsburgh Penguins here?
It's I like that, rounding a weird corner. I like that. like I think when it comes to Crosby, I think I think Crosby is going to be a Penguin as long as, like, they'll do everything to make sure that Crosby finishes his career in Pittsburgh. Like, you know, for example, Justin, if he ever said, you know what, I want to go somewhere else, like, that's his call. It's at some point, right? I think the thing that people have always kind of wondered is that, would he and McKinnon ever want to play together? That's one thing. But,
sorry, every other team in the
that?
NHL.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like that's one thing that, you know, occasionally has been suggested. Would they ever want to play together? But I think the Penguins will do everything they can that Crosby is only a Penguin. You know, I think that's their preference. Their preference. For Malkin and Letang, too. I think they want these guys to be career Penguins. But, you know, Malkin in particular has really struggled this year. I think that's led to some internal tension about how to handle it. But, and maybe at some point you have no choice but to say, all right, we have to pursue some things here. But I've always believed that the organizational preference is for all of these guys to be Penguins. But we all know that what you prefer and what sometimes you have to do, they're not the same thing.
Great point. Friedge, before we let you go, do you have a thought on, because once again, John Tortorella is in the headlines, the Patrick Laine benching last night didn't take long, and already there's a situation between the new star player and the coach.
So I was looking at this again today, and, you know, so Tortorella said it. I reread Tortorella's quotes, and I rewatched his media conference, and he said that it wasn't just the play.
Correct. And he said on and off the ice.
So I wonder if something was said on the bench.
Don't know. None of us know.
Like that's kind of like my theory. Like was, and you know, I could be wrong. Like nobody's giving this to me, but like what happened? Like, is it possible that, and this is what, you know, I'm kind of trying to figure out. Did someone say something to Laine on the bench about, hey, like this is what happened here, and they didn't like his reaction?
Has to be. I said that in our group chat too. Just like, there's no way you look at those bad coverages on your fourth game with a team and a guy and just say like, what if you don't have it by now? Sit down. Like, surely there was more to this in the locker room, you know, going through video between periods or on the bench. I totally agree, Elliot.
Like, it's just like taking Tortorella at his word, and like, he's not a liar. If anything, he's too honest. But you know, I'll tell you this, like the guy whose vote matters here the most is Kekalainen's. You know, this has to work for Columbus. You can't have this trade not work. So my question is, how does the GM feel about all this?
Great questions. We'll let you go on that to finish your blog. I know, Elliot, sorry to drag you away. Thanks, bud. We'll check in soon. Good job on the Hextall story.
All right, guys. Take care.
There is Elliot Friedman from 31 Thoughts Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, etc. So here's the latest news, if you're just joining us. Ron Hextall is negotiating right now with the Pittsburgh Penguins to become their next general manager. John Tortorella, on the heels of a couple of things, the Pierre-Luc Dubois situation, the Vincent Trocheck goal on Sunday, now adds the Patrick Laine situation to his portfolio, sitting down the Finnish sniper for a good chunk of the second period and the entire third period in the game last night against the Carolina Hurricanes. The story, the drama continues in Columbus. John Shannon will join us next. We'll get on the Edmonton Oilers page. Big win yesterday against the Ottawa Senators. Also, we'll get John's thoughts on the latest postponed game in the NHL, the Philadelphia Flyers and the Washington Capitals. That game was scheduled to start at 6 o'clock Eastern this evening. That has been postponed. The number of postponed games is, I believe, and we'll check this on the break, in the 30s now for the NHL. And it's only February. More Hockey Central in moments. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. Here's the news of the day. Ron Hextall negotiating to become the next general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Tonight's Philly-Washington game has been postponed. That was scheduled to get underway at 6 o'clock Eastern. So 10 games are now 9. And John Tortorella, the speculation continues what's happening in Columbus, benching Patrick Laine and Dean Kukin. We shouldn't omit him as well in the game last night for pretty much the balance of the second and the entire third against the Carolina Hurricanes. But the big story is the return of John Shannon, who was back on the Magic Eyeball last night. He joins us now on Hockey Central. John, how are you today, pal?
Are you telling me you're not calling me to talk about what happened in 1966 on this day, Jeff?
What happened in 1966 on this day, Johnny?
We announced, the NHL announced, that we're going from 6 to 12.
Ah, this was the doubling of the NHL, of course. Now,
I figured that's the only reason you'd call me.
Just hang on, because everyone knows we love to go down these wormholes. Just so we're all on the same page about this, a lot of people in the NHL needed to be dragged, you know, kicking and screaming into they had a nice little bit of business going here. But there were a number of other professional leagues. We think of the Western Loop when it was a pro league. There are other professional leagues that were threatening the NHL. So this was probably a situation where they had to as opposed to they wanted to, correct?
I think it's a bit of both. For the magnanimous amount of $2 million, we could buy an NHL team in 1966 and start up. And the good news is at least four of them are still alive in the same cities.
Yeah. And St. Louis got an organization without pretty much anything, John. That was the weird one out of all of it.
St. Louis got a team. St. Louis got a team because the owner of the Chicago Blackhawks owned an arena in St. Louis, and that's why they got a team.
And there was going to be a team, damn it. Thank you very much. Before we get to the Oilers, there are a number of different headlines, and I saw you tweeting about the Washington-Philadelphia situation. We talked about this earlier this week and late last week as well. I don't think anyone right now should be doing a victory lap in the North Division, even though there are not any COVID positives right now. But stateside, certainly big situations with New Jersey and Buffalo and Minnesota. These are all well-told stories. But is there any way that you can see all 31 teams playing 56 games?
I guess I got my fingers and toes crossed that they can. The one thing I can assure you is that this is the number one topic, the number one conversation, the number one let's throw another idea at the wall conversation yeah. that they're having in New York with and in Montreal to figure out how to make it work. I mean, I think the next step in my personal opinion, I think the next step is if everything stays normal in Canada, that we play 56 games across this country. And that they try to rejig the schedule in the United States to ensure that there's an equal amount of games being played by all the teams. Perhaps the three divisions go to 48 games, so we're not arguing and hassling over winning percentages, but everybody plays an equal amount of games.
Interesting. Stewie.
Thanks for joining us, John. Mike Smith made his season debut last night, making 27 saves. How did he look in your eyes last night? And do you really think him and Koskinen can really get it done this year for the Oilers?
Well, first of all, Anthony, I thought Smith looked really good. And perhaps the extra few weeks got him into training camp mode. Just remember, nobody played extra games, but he's been on the ice and he's been practicing a lot and working with Dustin Schwartz, the goalie coach in Edmonton. So I thought he was, I tell you what, yesterday's morning's press conference, he was like a kid in a candy store. He was so excited to be back on the ice. And I think that showed last night with the saves that he made. It's never going to be a Picasso with Smith, but he did what he had to do. And in fact, Ottawa never really scored on him. The one puck that went behind him was one that went off Adam Larson's stick, not Dodonov's stick. So he was good. He was solid. And I think that there's an added measure of what Smith brings to this team. And you've been in rooms and Justin's been in rooms. That it's important for veteran guys to be able to walk in and pull their weight. And I think that I think he opened a few eyes even on his own team last night by playing so well.
First off, John, just want to say great to get to chat with you. I wanted to throw a question out about to Jesse Puljujärvi and his new look, I guess, with the Edmonton Oilers. It feels like they found another guy who could be a contributor up front for this Oilers teams. What have you made of his game so far this season, and where do you see his game going the rest of the way?
I tell you what, I think if you were to write a synopsis of what's right with the Oilers season so far, you might have to put Puljujärvi just below Dreisaitl and McDavid, or McDavid to Dreisaitl, depending on which way you want to talk about it. But what Puljujärvi has done is nothing short of fantastic for this organization. Let's remember, when he went back to Europe, he made a long stop in New York City and had double hip surgery to repair some issues that he had in his last year in Edmonton that he played basically through pain. He came back from Finland with a much better understanding of the English language and a confidence that he belonged. And the other thing was he was again, both of you guys understand this better than I would, but he came back and was accepted by his teammates. The first time around, there were issues. He was a big farm boy from northern Finland. He FaceTimed his mom every day. He was homesick. It was difficult to get him into the North American world. It was a classic case of lost in translation. But now he's older. He's more mature. He still has that huge body. He's using that to effectiveness. And you know what? The start has been so good. He's having fun. You can see it on his face, and his player and his teammates respect him. And I think that's a winner.
You know, I want to take this next question, John, with all due respect, and personalize it for Anthony here, who at the NHL level can talk with more authority than all of us. Because the one thing about Puljujärvi from the last go-around, and I'm checking all these boxes that you're going through, like, yep, I heard that. Yep, the language was an issue. Yep, you know, accepted by his teammates this time around. One of the things, Stewie, that I heard about Puljujärvi in his first go-around with Edmonton is that he was, I guess for lack of a better term, a drill buster. That in practice, he was a guy, didn't get up, got to start the drill again. How much does that resonate through an entire team when there's one guy, he's a first-round pick, so he's going to get the first-round pick treatment, but he has a hard time getting through the practice? A lot of it, I'm sure, was a communication issue. John just mentioned that, and I think rightfully so. But do you have a couple of words about someone who's a drill buster at this level?
Well, coming from a guy that was a drill buster,
back of the line, Stewie, back of the line.
Your teammates do look at you kind of weird. And for me, for whatever reason, in practice, I could not put a pass on Joe Nieuwendyk's stick. And, you know, he had to pull me aside after practice one day and said, hey, kid, you're a good player. Just relax. But I could not hit his stick. So it does resonate with some of the teammates where they're like, hey, there's high expectations. You're a first rounder. Figure it out. But if you bust too many drills, that they do look at you a funny type of way. But again, it's language barrier. When I was in Russia, sure. I don't know what's going on. They're drawing up all these plays in Russian. I didn't really understand. So I understand it. Being a Finnish kid coming over, I totally understand it.
I want to get back to Mike Smith with you, John, here for a brief amount. Because sometimes, like, I don't know that there are many goalies that are like this. But if you go month to month with Mike Smith over the past couple of seasons, you know, sometimes he's an 895 goalie. Sometimes he's a 920 goalie. Sometimes he's a 910. Like, to me, consistency is the key for Mike Smith. And I don't know which, because I watched last night, I'm like, okay, Mike Smith looks really good, to your point. I just don't know which version of Mike Smith is going to show up.
Well, and isn't that the equation that Dave Tippett has to figure out? Because if you looked at last year's success before the pause, you know, both Koskinen and Smith would play well in streaks. And so it was up to Tippett to figure out who was on the streak. Last year it was, okay, we're going to go with Smith for two games. It wasn't one, or he wasn't going to be where he's going to play until he loses. It was going to play him two, and then we're going to Koskinen two. And that's something I think Tippett would like to do this year, except it's difficult to do with the schedule, with back-to-backs. It's difficult to do with the travel. I think it's Koskinen tonight against the Senators. I wouldn't be surprised that if Koskinen wins tonight, it's Koskinen again on Thursday and then go back to Smith for the next game. So that is going to be one of Tippett's greatest challenges, is try to how to manage those streaks that you were talking about to make both of their goaltenders effective. The one thing I would tell you is there was, you know, Mike Smith signed late in Edmonton. And really the argument was, hey, listen, our goaltending during the regular season last year wasn't bad. It got us to the playoffs. We were going to make the playoffs. It just, the goaltending wasn't good in the bubble. And everybody, all people do is remember the bubble. Ask the people in Vancouver. All they do is remember the bubble. All the people in Edmonton do is remember the bubble.
A great point.
Tyson Barrie seems to be fitting in on the offensive end with the Oilers. 10 points in 14 games, 5 power play points. How do you like his long-term prospects, you know, and his long-term future with Edmonton?
I think we have to wait and see, Anthony, simply because Ken Holland has so much cap space next summer, or not next, I guess next summer, in the offseason. You know, that to me is a big part of this, is what do we do? What do the Oilers do long-term with a lot more money? They're going to have more than $22 million to spend. So hopefully that will give them the ability to decide whether Barrie's a long-term remedy or just a short-term fix.
John, you mentioned the league doubling. Was it in 66, 67?
66.
Justin, come on now.
I know.
You got to know this stuff.
Well, this is why I'm going to
you. He just wants to know about 72 when the Islanders came in. Come on.
Yeah, no, but I do want historical perspective here because I want to know right now, Connor McDavid's game, is he as much better than the rest of the league than Wayne Gretzky was kind of at his peak? I'm trying to get a sense for who versus their peers at the time was where compared to one another. Because you can't ask, is Gretzky better than McDavid? That's not the same thing. But I think versus their peers at the time is a reasonably fair question.
Well, that's an interesting one. Because when you think about what happened Saturday night in Calgary and Connor McDavid and Dreisaitl too, but Connor McDavid played the last 5:45 of the third period to try to get the victory against the Flames. That's something we would have seen Wayne do. Glenn wouldn't have to say anything to him. Wayne would just stay out. The biggest difference for me, Justin, isn't McDavid. And I'm not trying to avoid the issue, but it's cast of characters. Mm-hmm. When you think about the Edmonton Oilers that Wayne played with, was 7, 8 Hall of Famers. And this is not a knock at the current Oilers, but the current Oilers as a group are a work in progress. Dreisaitl certainly at that level, but I love Yamamoto's game, but they're not Yari Curry. Or sure, Yamamoto isn't, but they're not Curry, they're not Coffey, they're not Anderson, they're not Messier. So Connor as an individual, I think there's a separation. But because it's a team game, it really doesn't make much of a difference.
But even within that context, too, the thing that I always come back to, like when you look at the supporting cast and look at those old Oilers squads, John, I don't care what the salary cap was, they couldn't have afforded to keep that team together.
That was always the story. Hey, listen, talk about the way the world has changed. I mean, under the CBA, every penny, everything you give a player goes against the cap now. I mean, yeah. Peter Pocklington, as part of one of the deals with Gretzky, gave him a strip mall.
Yeah.
Gave him real estate. So it's a different world. The game is much faster now. As fast as the Oilers were then, the game is so much faster. I mean Connor's ability to cut. I mean, again, you guys are the coaches, and you know the game better than I do. But Connor's ability to move and to change direction is better than anything I've ever seen of any player.
Yep, that's Gretzky, fair.
You know, that's the part where that separates Connor on so many different levels.
We only have about 30 seconds for this, and we got to get to a break, John. But today is National Pizza Day. What is your go-to?
Oh gosh, you know what? I'm going to do the Canadian thing. When in doubt, and I look at the menu, I'll take a Hawaiian.
Really, eh? The ham and pineapple.
Mm. Yep.
All right, there you go. As spoken by John Shannon. He's back here on the program. It's so nice to hear your voice, Johnny. Be well. Good to see you on the Magic Eyeball.
Have a great day, boys.
There he is, John Shannon, Oilers analyst for Sportsnet. Saw him last night on the Oilers Ottawa Senators game. When we come back, let's park as much time, running out of it, with the latest John Tortorella saga. This one involves Patrick Laine. Everybody put on their surprised face now. It's Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're giving you the chance to be part of the Rogers Hometown Hockey Viewing Party this Saturday, where you can virtually meet Ron, Tara, and NHL alumni. Tune in Thursday for your chance to win. You can also enter for the chance to win on our Instagram, or in the Rogers Hometown Hockey section of the Sportsnet app. Find details at sportsnet.ca/590. Stewie, Borny, Merrick, really quickly, we only got about a minute and a half to do this, but John Tortorella, back in the headlines, Patrick Laine gets benched yesterday for a chunk of the second and the entire third period. We talked about it with Elliot Friedman towards the bottom of the hour. Stewie, do you have a thought on, once again, Columbus in the headlines, and it's Patrick Laine grabbing some pine?
Well, I'm not too surprised, but it's more so on John Tortorella's end. And you have to figure out a way to coach your stars. And, you know, to bench a guy that scored 40 goals in this league four games in, I don't get it. In my opinion, I think he's embarrassing the GM. And for him to do this after four games and to a guy like Patrick Laine, who you want to be in your your organization, it's not sending a message to the free agent crop. So you got to find a way to get everybody to buy in. If not, that's on the coach, not the player.
Yeah, if you're looking to extend Laine and, you know, get your value back on Dubois, the player's got to want to be there, and he's going to want to know if the guy who's benching him four games in is going to be there too. So way too much drama, way too soon. They should have been able to work this out of the public eye at the start of everything, but Torts does not bend, so maybe he'll end up be broken by Kekalainen at some point.
You know what compounds all of this? Is last night, that Columbus-Carolina game was broadcast live in countries like Finland.
Aye.
That was a live, Sweden as well. That was a live game in his home country. Ouch.
Some new Roslovic fans in Finland.
He was really good yesterday. Smith and Jones next.